Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Between the Posts podcast. Today we will review a top match in Italy. League leaders AC Milan were visited in an empty San Siro by Atalanta Bergamo. My name is Erik Elias. With me here to discuss this match, also of Between the Posts, Jose Perez. Jose, welcome.
Hello, Erik, and hello, everyone. And it's nice to be covering Serie A again. Talking about league leaders, Milan. When's the last time we said those words?
Yeah, you're a bit older than me, but I think in the 80s and in the 90s, it was quite regular that they were league leaders, maybe with Ancelotti in the early 21st century, but not in the last decade. So some fun things going on in Italy for sure.
Yes, and in the case of Milan, we were discussing that a bit outside the pod of like, why is it exactly that Milan are leaders, even though talent-wise, their squad is not more talented than that of Inter, than that of Juventus, or even teams like Napoli or Roma. So what do you think has happened there?
Yeah, I think they are quite stable, no? I think Milan don't have the high peaks that other teams can have, like Inter or Atalanta, or maybe even Roma, not to mention Juventus. But I think Milan have been more consistent and that their off days, as we can call them, have been very few, which is why today's game against Atalanta was so surprising to me.
Yes, and one of the things that have made Milan league leaders is the fact that they've managed to get results and good performances despite the absences of certain players. And talking about absences, that's when we get to start talking about the lineup. So in the case of Milan, quite a few absences. The most important ones is that the central defenders, Alessio Romagnoli and Matteo Gavia, were absent. Romagnoli was suspended. Gavia was injured. Then they still have the very important absences of two of their key ball progressors. One is Ismail Benacer, the guy that all of analytics Twitter loves because, again, just great ball progression numbers. Very valuable player in midfield for Milano, who's still injured. And then Çalhanoğlu, he has Corona. He's been putting up some really nice numbers, not just in ball progression, but also just chance creation. Like he's averaging like 6.5 shot creating actions per 90, which is insane. And he wasn't there and it showed. So what kind of lineup did Milan have in this situation? So it was kind of a 4-2-3-1 shape with the ball, I would say. Mm-hmm. So we had Donnarumma at goal as usual. The center backs, Simon Kjær, and interestingly enough, in the absence of the other center backs, we had the 20-year-old Pierre Kalulu, and he's an interesting prospect. He's fast, good eye for tackle in the interception, good numbers in interceptions. Can be a bit too aggressive when trying to go for those anticipations and interceptions. So a common problem with him is that maybe he will follow the attacker for too long, and that can open gaps. And then he's had a few errors in previous games that led to goals. That will still happen today. Then, in the fullbacks, we had Davide Calabria as the right back, as usual, and Theo Hernandez as left back. The kind of midfield trio, basically, in that 4-2-3-1, the double pivot is Sandro Tonali and a very dynamic Franck Kessié. And in front of them was a new signing from Torino, Tsualio Meite, and then we had the trio of attackers. So Samu Castillejo on the right, who I'm still surprised is starting. We're going to get to that later. Rafael Leao on the left, and Zlatan, as usual, as the striker.
Yeah, and for me, Jose, you said it was kind of a 4-2-3-1, but yeah, for me, Milan today, we're a bit like teams you see more often today, right? It is 4-2-3-1 at one moment, and then it is more with one number six and two midfielders in front because of Kessié's dynamic play. So it's more or less interchangeable, you know?
Yes, I think you have a good point in the fact that Milan did kind of alter their shape with the ball, and it kind of alternated between 4-2-3-1 and more of a 4-3-3 just because of how much movement there was from Meite and Kessié ahead of Tonali. So what about Atalanta?
Yeah, Atalanta, as usual, in their 3-4-1-2 formation. Obviously, there is a very sad thing going on there because there is a rift. There is a fight between Papu Gomez, arguably their best player, the captain, and the manager, Gianpiero Gasperini. So Papu Gomez still did not play, has not played in the past few weeks. He will probably move to Sevilla. That's the rumor now anyways. And they also missed Pazalic, midfielder, and Piccini. Golini in goal, that's like always. Fullbacks, half German, half Dutch. Robin Gosens on the left and Hans Hateboer on the right. Then in the center, you had Rafael Toloi on the right, Jim City on the left, and Christian Romero in the center. Romero, a really good and aggressive man marker, so that's a really good addition to their last line. The double pivot, as always, Martin de Roon, another Dutchman, and Remo Freuler, who are really complimentary. Then at the number 10, in the absence of Papu, you have Matteo Pessina, and I must say, it's a big, big drop-off in quality. Pessina is not, it's like a, is more of a box-to-box number 10, a defensively aware number 10, but comes nowhere close to Papu Gomez when it comes to creating chances. And then you have Duvan Zapata on the left of the striker duo, who absolutely bossed some of the Milan defenders today. And the best player of the pitch by a country mile, Josip Iličić. So it's sad that Papu Gomez is not there anymore, and he will be a great player for whoever picks him up. But in the new age, it is more responsibility for Zapata and even more creativity for Iličić. So as Johan Cruyff would say, every disadvantage has also its advantage.
Yes, and I have to admit that given my bias for La Liga, I am kind of happy that we get Papu Gomez in La Liga. So I do admit I'm kind of happy about that. But it will be interesting to see what happens in this post-Papu Atalanta. And as we will talk a bit about later, yes, a lot more responsibility now falls on Duvan and on Iličić. And judging from today, I think they're handling it pretty well. So what happened during the first half?
Yeah, well, actually, Milan started really well. And with the benefit of hindsight, we can say they had their best spell of the game in the first 5 minutes, with Ibrahimovic being very dominant. And I thought, okay, they're going for it. So what happened in those first 5 minutes, Jose?
So to begin with, I think that it was that phase where you didn't really have too many sequences of like Milan playing out from the back and Atalanta pressing them, which is why you got the chances. And even when they did, like, yes, Milan could do the long balls or they did a goal kick. Like, that's why it was like these weird first 5 minutes where, because of those situations where like Milan was winning either the headers or the second balls, there were opportunities that they had to pick up the ball and then kind of start passing the ball around in Atalanta's half, which is the thing that Milan rarely got to do throughout the game. Because I think whenever Milan actually could string like 10 passes in Atalanta's half, they could create something good. It just, they rarely got the chance. And in those first 5 minutes, at least they had some chance to do that. Like the huge chance that Zlatan had from a ball that Mate picked up after a goal kick from Donnarumma. And then a minute after, you had like a nice combination between Leao and Theo that led to a good cross from Theo that Ibra came close to shooting. So those were probably the two biggest chances. Well, those were the two biggest chances for Milan in the first half.
Yeah, that's true. Because after this first 5 minutes, we can say Atalanta did not start sharply enough. Atalanta did not have their head with them, whatever. I'm not going to say that those cliches, but it's a fact that Milan started the match way better. And after that, we started to see the tactics that made sure Atalanta was going to dominate this game. Whenever Donnarumma started his build-up for Milan, Atalanta, as always, they pressed man-to-man, which meant the two strikers, Duvan Zapata and Iličić, on the Milan centre-backs. The wing-backs of Atalanta, Gosens and Hateboer, were pressing the full-backs, Calabria and Theo. And in midfield, it was man-marking. So Pessina, who does a really good job with that, I must say, was man-marking Tonali. De Roon was following Kessié wherever he went. And Freuler was following Maite. And yeah, that way, Milan tried to build up, but also not really, because their passing options were naturally limited. And they played the long ball a lot of times, and I think even too easily, because man-marking is very easily manipulated. So especially in midfield, they could have done a bit more, from my perspective, to get open, maybe to have a more easy pass to Ibrahimovic, for example. Maybe they could drop in one of their wingers into midfield to make the center backs choose. Will I go into midfield? Will I stay back? I thought Milan very easily elected to go for the long ball, which was then often picked up by Atalanta. So I think they didn't really do well there.
Yeah, the man-to-man is always a bit tricky in the sense that if your team is like on a really good state, like emotionally, psychologically, where they are winning a lot of duels, then it works great. If you're having a bad day, it's going to look a bit messy. Or if the opponent has like a really good dribbler, like what happened in that PSG game, like with Neymar versus Atalanta. Like, fortunately for them, like Milan doesn't have a dribbler on that level. They just have Samu Castillejo.
Yeah, true. I think Çalhanoğlu could have done a lot more damage for them on the winger's position today. But for me, it's just the fact that they went into the long ball too easy. And that's actually how we see Atalanta regain control a little bit. And also how Iličić got his biggest chances. Can you talk a little bit about the Atalanta mechanisms in possession? Like normally, Papu Gomez plays a really big role in that. Obviously, he's not there anymore. But today, it didn't really hurt them. Can you give your perspective on that?
Absolutely. And I think a big reason that it doesn't really hurt them is because how Duvan and especially Iličić are behaving these days. Because going back to this attacking trio that now Atalanta has, Pessina, like you've mentioned, is really there more for what he does without the ball rather than what he does with the ball. The guy who's really having kind of replacing a lot of Papu's output and movements and everything is Iličić, because he's the one who is now a lot... Because before, Papu was the one who moved everywhere and Iličić liked to be kind of the executioner, the guy who gets the ball there and then tries to like make the dribble go for the shot and that's it. And I think it's going to be a trend now that now in this post-Papu Atalanta, Iličić is going to be more of a creative hub than he was before. And we saw a lot of that in this game. Like we saw Iličić moving a lot towards the center, doing the kinds of things that Papu did of like trying to link up everyone. And the amazing thing is that it doesn't affect that much his duties as a goal scorer, as an assist provider and everything. Like he was still like on that right half space, trying to dribble through people, trying to get his shot off. Like he covers a lot of ground. He covered a lot of ground with intensity, and he managed to kind of do a bit of everything, of link up, but also of like actually being a threat from his usual role.
Yeah, and I do think today he was awesome. He was really top class. But I do think that if Atalanta actually want to compete in these top matches, then he needs to be at this level, because I don't see anyone else doing this kind of stuff for them at the moment.
Absolutely. I do agree with that. Like, that's the thing. Like, this puts a lot of responsibility on Iličić, and that would mean that he would need to be on top of his game week in, week out, and that's tiring. The other thing that we had is Duvan. He does this, like, this is nothing too new for Duvan. He positioned himself in this game very wide. Like, sometimes he wanted to run in that channel between, say, Calabria and Kjaer. Sometimes he would just stay even wider, like making the run like outside Calabria anyways, or trying to go for that one versus one with Calabria, who generally has done a good job with Milan this season. But yeah, I wouldn't say he's an outstanding one versus one player. So he suffered a bit with Duvan and with Huysens.
Yeah. So I'd say after that first 5 minutes, which were clearly for Milan, Atalanta took over the game. But for me, in the first half, for the first like 30 minutes or so, I think Milan's low block actually did pretty well. Didn't give away that much. I didn't think Atalanta were creating chance after chance after chance. But they did get their goal, which came from a set piece. And it's funny to see a set piece broke up the match. Can you talk a little bit about how that went down? Because it was a smart set piece.
Yes, and I think, I don't know if we've mentioned this before in the podcast, and it's a stat that I should bring up somewhere, but I always forget. I do think short corner routines tend to have higher rates of like being successful than regular corner routines. This was another short corner. Iličić kept the ball for a while, gives it to Huysens, who is like waiting right like on the left half space right next to the box. Very quickly delivers a really nice cross that was headed into the goal by Cristian Romero, who pretty much kind of outmuscled and outsmarted Kalulu in that situation.
Yeah, I think Kalulu shows all the traits of a young central defender who's talented, very good physically, because they can be a bit unfocused in the box. And you saw that here as well. And it cost Milan the first goal. And basically, Jose, for me, after that, one, the big Iličić show started, but two, I don't think Atalanta were ever in trouble after that first goal ever again.
I would generally agree with that. Like, it was after that first goal, afterwards, basically, Milan started getting, like, dangerous shots off until after the third goal, basically. So it was that moment between the first goal and the third goal that was kind of Atalanta's best moments, but it was also best moments because it was the Ilicic show. So let's discuss that a bit, because without Papu, it does feel sometimes that the mechanisms of this Atalanta can be a bit more predictable. Like, for example, those first, like, from up to like the first half hour or so that Milan was defending all those crosses, that's the thing. It felt a bit predictable because it was mostly them trying to go for the cross into the box. It was crosses all happening at a very fast, everything happening at a very fast pace with all the pressing. It's hard for a team to defend, even if you know that the crosses are coming, but it was a bit more predictable. Once Ilicic started having more influence in the center, that's really when you felt like Atalanta was being even more dominant, because you could see Milan's defense getting pushed back even more and kind of being more scared of the threats. Because once you get the ball in those central areas, yes, if Ilicic gets a shot, it's a really good chance that could occur.
Yeah, and I must say, the guy is like 32 years old. He's just constantly finishing people. He never played outside Slovakia or Serie A. He's 1.90 tall. Like, what is this guy? Every time I see him play, I'm like, that's not normal.
And again, it's so useful because you have this guy who's actually kind of agile and nimble and good dribbler. And at the same time, he can also like just push you off and win an aerial ball off you. Like, it's just a pretty complete attacker. So in this one, he actually attempted in the first half 9 dribbles. According to Who Scored Stats, he completed 3, so not that many. But again, even then, every attempted dribble is probably a Milan defender kind of freaking out, and that's always good.
Yeah, and it should also be said that in games like this, where the opponent does not really try to build up from the back, and Atalanta have a lot of possession, he doesn't also have to do a lot of work without the ball. So, because I don't think he has the best stamina. I don't think he can go for a lot of high-intensity sprints. Anyways, yeah, Atalanta dominates first half, 8 shots for them, 4 shots for Milan, of which 2 in the first 5 minutes. Pioli, Milan manager, needs to adjust, didn't play well his team first half. What did he do? And did you agree with what he did?
Yes. So at the beginning of the second half, there was a substitution. We had Brahim Diaz, who, I guess I'm the Real Madrid fan here, so I am biased to say that I like him. So we had Brahim Diaz going in and Mate going out. Personally, I think when we first, I remember that when you commented on that change, you thought, well, this is not going to give Milan more control.
Mm-hmm, true, because he's more of an attacking profile than a midfield profile, right?
That is correct. So it didn't look like a change that could give them more control. But later on, we could see that it was a good change for Milan because Brahim is a great dribbler, a player that because of his dribbling, and this is like a very basketball concept, like he has a lot of gravity. He's a player who disorders opposition defenses, not just because he dribbles, but also because people know he's a good dribbler. They try to put like several players on him to take the ball off him. Mm-hmm. And that creates space for others. That allowed his runs also allowed Milan to have the ball for a bit longer. Yeah, I would say that Brahim had a positive impact.
I thought it would make the match even more up and down. And I thought Milan would not be benefited from that. But he showed good control, and I don't think he did any reckless stuff. I think Milan's lack of control over this entire match mainly laid at the fact they played Kessier and Tonali together. Kessier is really good, but not at controlling the play from deep. And I think Tonali is not even nearing the level of Bennacer. So I think that kind of gave away the control and created the context for Atalanta to play a good game.
Well, now that we are talking about that, it'd be fun to do like a small parenthesis. What do you think of Tonali in general?
Yeah, well, I think that if he would not have played for Brescia like Pirlo did, and he did not play in the same position as Pirlo did, and if he didn't really have quite the same hair as Pirlo did 15 years ago, maybe people wouldn't call him the new Pirlo because he doesn't play like Pirlo. He doesn't have the passing like Pirlo. Like when he's not pressed, then he can pass, but he's not like the solution maker under the press. So I'm not really a fan, actually.
I would get shot for this if I say it too loudly. But I also, let's just say that I also thought Pirlo was a bit slow back then. And I'm not sure Pirlo's a player that would deal too well with like the intensity of pressing these days. But again, it's probably a bad idea to think about players in like old player in modern context.
Yeah, but yeah, a little bit of a deviation, but it's fun, not too long. With Pirlo, you have like the Pirlo at Milan, which was basically the age before pressing, and then he was really good. And then you have the Pirlo at Juventus, which was a bit more in the age of pressing. And then Conte really made that midfield around him, right? With Marquisio, with Pogba, with Vidal. Like he was so supported there that it didn't really hurt them, I think.
Yeah. And well, Tonali doesn't have that kind of support. Like the thing with Tonali is that I was making the comparison, but like while we were talking before the pod, that it reminded me a bit of like Chaka problems in that good passer, yes, mm-hmm. he can get a good progressive pass in.
If he's not pressured. If you exactly. press him, you have a problem.
Yeah, and same issue as Chaka. Like they're not exactly very press-resistant players. They're not particularly quick at executing that pass, which is what makes them struggle under pressure. So in an environment like today, like against Atalanta, yeah, a player like Tonali is not going to be too impactful. And yeah, we have to mention these things because a big reason that Milan couldn't deal with the Atalanta press is that, yes, they lack Calhanoglu, who is a big ball progressor from them, and they lack Bennacer, who is probably their key midfield ball progressor.
Yeah, anyways, for all of their problems, Milan gets behind by two goals in the 52nd minute. Another Ilicic action, and he wins a penalty. I thought at first it was because of Kalulu who made another mistake, but Ilicic got a penalty this time because Kessier elbowed him. Bit of a nasty stuff to see in the replay. And Ilicic took the penalty himself and scored it. So that was 2-0 after 52 minutes. Yeah, I don't think that had that much to do with the overall pattern of the game. It's the penalty. 5 minutes after that, Kalulu, we mentioned him a lot, was injured. And a guy I nearly forgot, Matteo Musacchio, came into the game as a central defender. Not sure he was the best central defender on the pitch in the half hour he played, but anyways.
Yeah, and afterwards, I mean, like throughout this game, like my impression was that the script never, like the game was played on Atalanta's terms, to put it that way. Like, sure, Milan got like a nice period in the first 5 minutes, and then they had another nice period in the last 15 minutes because Atalanta had already scored all the goals they needed and they kind of toned down the intensity. So, for example, this section, like between, say, the 55th and like the 75 minute, not that much happened, but at the same time, it's not like Milan was really getting dangerous stuff up there. And I think it's important to mention that this was kind of a pretty solid performance, for example, from Atalanta's defense. Like you had guys like Cristian Romero did a good job being aggressive, dealing with guys like Zlatan. There wasn't really much danger that Milan got into Atalanta's box. Like you could still have some nice plays from Kessié. You could have some Brahim doing nice dribbles, but it never really translated into shots.
No, and that's quite important in the game because if you don't shoot, you can't score. I did see a shot from Calabria after a set piece from like 35 meters. That was pretty audacious. You can't say the guy lacks confidence. Anyway, what we were all waiting for, of course, Milan two goals down, some structural changes to try to impact the match, which came after 70 minutes. Rebic and Mandzukic, a double Croatian substitution, came into the field for Leao, who I did like in the first 5 minutes, but not so much afterwards. And Castillejo, who you said earlier was not very good, who basically is not a very good player. And I thought initially, Mandzukic with his debut, of course, I thought initially it would be a 4-2-4 with Mandzukic and Ibrahimovic as the strikers, Brahim Diaz on the right and then Rebic on the left. But actually, it was a 4-2-3-1 still with Mandzukic on the right, almost playing as the second striker, but okay. Mandzukic on the right and still three men in midfield and Rebic on the left. And I must say, if you have Ibrahimovic and Mandzukic, you have a pretty impressive, imposing aerial threat, I think. But Milan didn't really make that much use of it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, they really didn't make that much use of, like, a smart long ball approach. Because there were times in which you did feel they were kind of abusing the long ball. Like, it's just, it didn't feel like it worked. Like, in the first half, maybe they did it a bit too frequently. Then in the second half, once you have like Mandzukic and Zlatan up front, they weren't doing the long ball approach.
Yeah, that's strange.
It is strange. It will be interesting to see what happens in the future there. Because I have to admit, I am not the biggest fan of like Milan's wing options right now. So I would probably start Mansu on either of the wings. And he's done that role, for example, in Juventus a lot, like where he started in the wings and then kind of plays as another striker and then try to make the diagonal run into the box.
But I really liked him at Juve, but we do have to say he's been out for like a full 18 months that we didn't see him play. You don't know how he is now. He looked okay today, but only played 30 minutes. So who knows?
That's a good point. And again, it's a bit hard in these last 20 minutes to say, well, did they get better with the changes or is it just Atalanta who reduced the intensity because they didn't need the goal? And talking about goals, I guess we need to mention the very last one, which was honestly quite fun. Another instance of aggressive Atalanta pressing. Cristian Romero, the center back, kind of gets the ball, recovers the ball, and then makes a run like crazy forward. Gets the ball, and then he's basically, as if he were like a number 10, running into like Milan's box and then makes an assist for Duván Zapata, who is making the same run that he had been making the entire game into that channel between center back and fullback, gets a goal. Just very impressive thing from Romero, who just did the entire thing. Like basically, that entire goal is basically his.
I apologize for listeners who hear fireworks at my place because the Dutch government has instilled a curfew and people are protesting it outside of my house. So if you hear anything, I'm inside. I'm objecting to the rules, but not everyone thinks like that. So sorry about that.
I mean, Dutch people just really like their fireworks too.
Yeah, but I'd like to apologize for any fireworks people hear in the background. Anyway, yeah, 0-3, game over. Is there anything you'd like to say about the last 15 minutes of the game? Because Milan attacked. They didn't score. They had two shots on target for the entire match. One of those from Mandzukic 1 minute after he was into the game and one of Ibrahimovic in stoppage time. So I don't really have anything to add.
No, because in the end, those last 15 minutes, sure. Like, by the way, by the time that third goal was scored, it was 17 shots from Atalanta versus 8 from Milan. It was clear who was dominating. Afterwards, of course, in those last 15 minutes, Milan got like another 6 shots. But I mean, it's just a game state thing. At that point, it was pretty much over, which is why Atalanta was okay just
the low quality shots as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's not much more to say. So I guess we just go into the takeaways. What does Milan learn from this?
Well, they learn that they should be... Yeah, that's cheap for me. But they learn that if they are pressed, they need a plan to play out from under it. But also, they were like 6th or 7th last season. It's unrealistic to think that if they miss two of their best players, that they have the squad to compete in these kind of top games. Because I do think we have to see Atalanta as a top team in Italy. But I think we, as viewers, as analysts, I think we learned today that in a title race without the best players, Milan can look toothless like this because today they were not the better team. Yeah, I think the build-up thing is definitely something they should take away, but also this is very natural. Like you can't do it all at once in one transfer window. It's impossible.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of amazing that they are leaders, but personally, and I imagine that Milan fans have high hopes at this point, but I mean, as long as you land top 4, I think that's good for this season. Like that's already a pretty successful season in my eyes. I think what they're doing right now was unexpected. It's a bit of a small miracle. They should keep trying to get the title, but it's not the worst thing in the world if they don't do it. Again, today was a good example of the fact that Milan has been doing a good job throughout the league because they've been so consistent, because they've dealt with several absences better than other teams and have been consistent despite those absences. Uh-huh. But yeah, today was a good example that at their peak, teams like Atalanta or Inter do play better than them.
Yeah, I do wonder if they are not handicapped, like if they have the fit team, if they are not just one of the best squads in Italy at the moment. I do wonder. I think they might be.
Yeah, and in general, it's nice to see what's happening. It's nice to see, for example, a guy like Calabria have the confidence to do a shot from 30 meters. Like, it just shows like that the entire team is confident. To see Theo like doing such nice job, like driving the ball forward and trying to shoot. Like, it's nice to see the current state of Milan and the confidence the players have right now in their game plan and in what they can do. So let's hope they can keep going forward with that. And how about Atalanta? What do we say about them?
Yeah, I have one small thing for them. I have a piece of free transfer advice for them. I think the position they need an upgrade the most is at the number 10. I like Pessina. I don't think he's an idiot or something, but he does his job well without the ball. But there's a player at Manchester United who never plays. His name is Donny van de Beek. He's a number 10. He really profits of having a left-footed creator on the right. He had that at Ajax with Hakim Ziyech. He might have it now with Iličić. He can do everything Pessina does without the ball. He can do as well. He has the fitness. He's smart. He makes those runs into depth. He never plays at Man U. We played like 300 minutes. If you make a call to Man U, you say, hey, listen, we play with a number 10. He is a number 10. We will play him 20 league matches. He can do experience with us, and he comes back with you as a new player. Who could be against that?
What I presume is that you basically want to turn Atalanta into like half of the Dutch national team.
Well, that's because Hans Hatenboer is in the Dutch national team, but that's a scandal. He shouldn't be there. He always plays so bad for us. So no, I don't want that. I want De Roon and Donny in one midfield.
I mean, the solution is very simple for the Netherlands. Just keep playing back, like basically play the Atalanta system.
No. We can't do that. We always play 4-3-3, Jose. You have so much to learn. We always play 4-3-3. We cannot play anything else. Come on, man. No joke, but that would be a good transfer for them. And in terms of their overall form and how it's going, if they can do this, they might contend in Serie A. It would make it even more fun because it's already the most fun title race of Europe at the moment, and it will be. I hope it. I'm not sure, but I hope it.
Yes, and as we said before, it will require a lot of games from Iličić at a very high level. I mean, if he can do that, that's great. That'll make them very fun to watch.
Yeah, as we are recording this, Juventus are sixth. Sixth. Even though they are playing now, so not entirely honest, but still. Sixth. That's low. Oof.
If there's a silver lining to this Corona year, is the fact that the title races throughout Europe have gotten more fun, for sure.
I've put off the blanket. Jose, thanks so much for recording. Listeners, thanks so much. We will be back next week. I think there are some good games in Germany. I'm not sure, but I think we'll go to Germany, Jose.
I won't make any promises, but we won't run out of good games to cover. That is for sure.
All right. Thanks so much. Thanks for listening, and we will be back next week. Thanks.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks, Eric, for having me. See you around.